because we got to bring in our man James Hammer here from the Insiders. Hammer, what's happening?
What's going on?
What's going on, Hammer? How you doing, man?
Good. Just got done with a walk. It's like, yeah, I'm good.
All right.
40 and 42, Hammer. The season in that breakdown feels like a disappointment. But in the end, the Sacramento Kings are in the same exact spot that they were last year. They have an opportunity to make the playoffs through the play-in, and I guess we just wait for Wednesday. How do we balance those two things? The fact that this season it feels like a disappointment. There's one sneeze for James, where now James is on the board with a sneeze. We recognize now that like the season is a disappointment in comparison to last year. I think most fans overall would consider this season a disappointment given the excitement going into the year, but they're still here with a chance to compete for the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, this season feels like five seasons in one.
Yeah.
I think at a minimum. I mean, first of all, it's gone by really fast. The fact that the season's over is absolutely crazy. But it just feels like so many different seasons packed into one. You know, there's the early season that's disappointment. There's the Mike Brown gets fired and sort of the recovery portion of the season. There's the De'Aaron Fox gets, you know, starts the trade rumors and then he's traded season. And then, you know, maybe two or three other seasons after that, as we've watched this team develop, fall on hard times, find itself. And then finally get to a place for where right now I think they're pretty comfortable with who they are. I just don't know that's very good.
Hmm.
And so I think it's like, look, you are in it. This team can make it to the playoffs. Like, especially if the path is what it is, like through Dallas, followed by, you know, maybe a trip to Memphis to play the Grizzlies. I don't think the Grizzlies are very good. I think they're a hot mess right now, and I think they're gettable. And so, yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, we still consider this sort of a disappointing season. But if this team makes the playoffs, then I don't think it is, strangely.
Hmm.
Do you – we were having a talk earlier about, like, what do you do with this team and, you know, moving forward. And one of the things that we just kind of laid out and you talked about – is the number of twists and turns that this team took, this franchise took throughout the season. How much do you factor that into evaluating what you do with this roster next year?
Okay, so I think it's complicated, right? Like, you always hear people say, well, you know, if Doug Christie would have had this team the entire season, it probably would have been different. And I disagree. Like, I don't think that that's the case. Maybe it would have been a little bit different, but, you know, who knows? You can't just make a blanket statement like that. But when I'm watching this team in the final 27, 28 games of the season after the trade deadline, you give them a week, you give them 2 weeks to kind of let things, you know, figure themselves out, like... And you hope that they would start to play better and start to grow towards something by the end of the season. I haven't seen that, to be honest with you. I see a team that, like, every once in a while is really good and every once in a while is really, really bad. And everything else is just kind of mid. It's just kind of 500. And so when I look at this team, I think if you walk out of this season with anything other than like an honest assessment of who they are and that this is not tenable for next season and the season after that, then I think that you're on the same sort of wavelength that I am. But I guess somebody could squint and say, oh, if this happened or if you had a little bit more time on this or something like that. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't buy any of that. This team has had plenty of time to figure it out. And, you know, they're the same team that lost to Washington, then beat two really good teams in the Cavs and the Pistons, and then lost a couple of games that, you know, were relatively close down the stretch. So it's just not a winning team. It's not a losing team. It's just a 500 team. And I don't think that's not being fair or anything else. I just think that's like an honest assessment. And if that's who you want to be, that's fine. Because next season you could still make the playoffs being a 500 team or still make the play-in probably. But if you hope to grow and to improve and to put yourself on the map, I don't think that there's organic growth left in this team to do that from who they are today to who they would be next season with like the same roster.
So no matter what happens, barring, I'm guessing, a massive upset in round one of the playoffs, if you make it, you expect or you feel like there should be changes coming to this team and perhaps this organization as well this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, like clearly there are already going to be changes, whether it's coaching staff or front office, you know, because Wes Wilcox is gone. And because Doug Christie, if he's going to be the head coach, he still should have the right to hire his own staff and to make that staff his own and like feel like it's his own. Because I still don't think Doug Christie feels like the staff is his and that, you know, this is what's in place right now. But this summer, I expect massive amounts of change there just because, you know, again, every coach gets to build their own staff and to get people that they're comfortable with and that they can trust. And I just don't know that the level of trust has ever been there with Doug and his staff. Not all of it. You know, there are some guys that he trusts fully and others that he probably doesn't. But overall, they're, you know, you need to get that uneasiness out of the way and kind of move forward.
So one of the things that I talk about when I bring that up is, you know, how do I put this? How many type of moves do you think this team is in need of because of what we've seen this year? Because I look at it, and I'll tell you why I asked the question, because I look at it, and DeMar DeRozan is where you go to first. Like I said, number one, because his contract seems pretty movable. There's questions about his fit with the team and what you could get back, right? So DeMar DeRozan is probably first on the list. But after that, you go down the list of players. I don't think you necessarily can move Zach LaVine. I think you probably could move Sabonis, but I'm starting to have more and more questions as the days go along about what you could move him for and what you could get for him. Keegan Murray, I don't think you're moving on from him. Maybe Malik Monk is on that list. I don't think Keon Ellis is. So, like, as you go down the list, you're still looking at essentially a lot of the same guys still coming back next year. Is that a bad thing? I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think you can have a DeRozan or one of the people move, fill it in with a different piece, and you can be better than what you were this year. But I think that's a little more realistic than like wholesale changes.
No, I would agree with you. Yeah. I mean, if I'm circling, I mean, you're going to have, I hate to call them peripheral players, but of course, like the Jay Crowders and Markelle Fultz and
Jay still didn't play, you know, yesterday.
Jay's never going to play.
Doug McDermott, all those guys, you know, you can kind of circle those guys and say, okay, like, look, there could be changes there. There's going to be the Trey Lyles situation that you need to figure out whether Trey will be back or not. At this point, I would say probably like 40-60 him coming back, you know, 60% that he wouldn't be back. But, you know, that again, that's just my own personal feeling today, like whether or not you could get him on a better deal than what you have him on right now. I think you can. He's on a 2-year, what, $16 million deal. He's probably looking at like a 2-year, $8 million deal next time around.
Man, he lost half his value. God, that's tough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do think, though, that that's a player that you could either bring back or look to move on from. Jake LaRavia is the other one you're going to have to make. You're going to have to make some sort of decision on whether you want to keep him or whether you can afford to keep him, whether he wants to stay. All of these things are still up in the air. And then I would say the same thing about, you know, the Keon Ellis situation, which is just weird. You know, they've got to decide whether they're going to opt out and make him a restricted free agent and give him a big contract, or if they're going to opt in and then try to work out an extension down the road. Neither, you know, both come with their risks and certainly their rewards. So, yeah, I mean, I think that this team is going to look different no matter what. So right there, I talked about what, like three or four rotational players, three rotational players, and then the Keon Ellis situation and the whether you're going to trade DeMar or not. Like, I think that this team could look dramatically different going into next season, but that's just me. We don't even know who's going to be making those decisions yet, and that's what complicates everything.
As Jacob Z points out, Terrence Davis played before Jay Crowder.
Did.
That's amazing. Terrence Davis has been on the roster for 7 minutes, and he played before Jay Crowder, who stepped off a plane.
Did play.
He played yesterday?
No, he played last week.
Did he?
Who was it against?
Yeah, let me look. I'm almost positive that Jay Crowder played last week. Jay Crowder.
I must have dozed off.
It wasn't for long.
I must have dozed off for these Jay Crowder minutes.
Oh yeah, he played against Charlotte. He played 4 minutes and 38 seconds.
I was gonna say Charlotte. That was the game I didn't see in real time.
I have
zero
recollection.
He also played against Orlando.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I turned that.
I was gone in the third quarter.
Yeah, sorry.
But he only played like 2 minutes and 35 seconds in the previous 30 games.
The best part about that is Jay Crowder walked off a plane against Minnesota, showed up at shoot around in Tim's, and just not only played, didn't he start that night?
Yeah, he started.
He did. Yeah.
Kings won that game, by the way.
And we were like, we love Jay Crowder because he was talking crazy to Julius Randle.
Yeah.
And we're like, that's what we needed.
And we never saw him again until apparently Orlando, which most of us weren't watching at the time.
They're just saving him for the playoff run.
That's
what are
it.
You talking about?
There we go.
I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Using him against Daniel Gafford.
Your LeBron James stopper.
Lou Dort.
What do you think of this matchup on Wednesday, Hammer? We outlined it's kind of interesting. Obviously, the Kings they beat Dallas all three times this year. They never once played Luka Doncic on either team that he was on, and they never played Anthony Davis either. So they play, and sadly, it was the Kings that Kyrie Irving got hurt against. So they haven't really played this version, whatever it is, of the Dallas Mavericks, but it seems like it's going to center on that familiar matchup of Anthony Davis versus Domantas Sabonis.
Yeah, well, I would say this. Anthony Davis did play against the Kings a lot early in the season, and he busted him up playing for the Lakers.
The Lakers, yeah.
You know, we had that streak of, 11 straight games or 10 straight games with Domantas Sabonis to open their careers, beating Anthony Davis, and that's over and done with. I thought Davis played really well.
I think Anthony
Davis
is on like a 4 or 5 game winning streak right now.
Yeah, he's still 6 games under.
Yeah. But, I don't know what to expect from this team. And what we should expect is the Kings to injure some of their players, because I think that every single time they played them, they hurt somebody.
Oh, geez.
So you remember it was Malik Monk who took out Daniel Gafford's knee.
Mm.
And then it was Kyrie Irving that, you know, he took a bad step and hurt himself against the Kings. So I don't know
I
who it'll be this
on
time.
Valanciunas, didn't he?
Yeah.
Is that who he stepped on?
Yeah, that's possible.
Unfortunately, I don't want to say it's karma or not because I don't think about it that much, but when overweight Luka fell on Malik Monk last year, that's
that
what
was
happened.
Unnecessary.
Oh, he was out of shape.
I
he
agree
said
with
he
you.
Flopped.
100%.
He didn't have to fall like that.
He did not. I totally agree with that.
He wasn't like, me and Kenny, in all seriousness, he wasn't trying to hurt him, but he was flopping around and got somebody hurt.
He wasn't trying to help him. That's for sure.
That's when Luka was a heel. He's a baby face now.
Cody Luka.
It's Cody Luka. He is
when he partied in Dallas, it was a problem. When he parties in L.A., it's really cool.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
It's baby face Luka right there. Baby face Luka. Kings went 14-9 at home under Doug Christie. A total record, I believe we have it 27-24. Does any of that matter headed into Wednesday's game? What are the most important components for the Kings going into Wednesday's game? Because we have all these stories. You just mentioned the five seasons in one, the Doug Christie's, the this, the that. None of that feels like it matters on Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Dallas Mavericks just aren't a good team at all. Not at this point. You know, they haven't had time to gel. When they did get a little bit of time to gel, they really didn't take off like you thought. Their post-trade, post-All-Star, you know, record is horrible. It's bad, like the Kings is bad, but I think it's even worse. So I don't know what to expect, though, because that doesn't mean that the Kings are just going to, you know, host a team and beat them. For as bad as Dallas has been in the second half of the season and, you know, traded Luka Doncic and all that, and then had Anthony Davis go down as soon as he got traded, I mean, the Kings have been, you know, basically the same team. So, you know, we're looking at two teams that, for whatever reason, couldn't get out of their own way this season. And they just happen to be better than a horrific Phoenix Suns team that just hates each other and really couldn't get out of their own way.
I think you're going to get a really good effort from Dallas. One of the things that I think about them is, yeah, I'll say it. I think they're well coached. They're well coached. Jason Kidd, throughout all this, even though they haven't had the talent to win a lot of games, when I watch them, they play hard. They, you know, they're getting after it. And that allowed them to get a couple wins that maybe they shouldn't have. I remember when they traded Luka, they went into Boston and won a game. After AD went down or something, they went into Chicago and Chicago was cooking and won a game. And that's because these guys, they play hard. So with an opportunity to keep their season alive and to potentially get into the playoffs on the line, I think you're going to see a really good effort from the Dallas Mavericks on Wednesday. Jason Kidd is going to have those guys ready to play.
Yeah, I totally agree. And to be honest, like, why not Dallas? Why not Sacramento, you know, making the play-in? I mean, the playoffs. Like, there's a definite possibility. It's not like Golden State is just so incredibly good. Golden State has all kinds of holes. Now, can they mop the floor with the Kings? Sure they can. But the Kings have also beat them. And it's not a team that's just so scary that you can't beat that team. And I'd say the same thing about Memphis. I think everybody has circled Memphis as, like, probably one of the easiest outs. And it's not just because they fired their coach with nine games left in the season. It's because when they did that, they also switched their entire offense and became extremely predictable. And most people look at that team and say, oh, that team's gettable. You know, you can go and beat them in a one game play-in scenario in Memphis. There's no reason why the Kings can't do that. And so you're kind of like, if you're either one of these teams, the Kings or the Mavs, you should be looking at this as like a pretty solid opportunity to potentially make the playoffs. Yeah. And, you know, it's not like a foregone conclusion that there are two teams above you that are just way better. Like if we would have had a couple of things go differently in the last couple of days, and this was, you know, the Clippers and Minnesota at 7-8, I would just say, okay, well, you know, this thing's over. There's no reason to, you know, maybe you could get Minnesota, but not really. Or if it was Denver, even with, you know, them firing Michael Malone, if it was Denver and the Clippers, like I wouldn't feel like the Kings really had a chance to advance, but that's not who potentially you could play. Right. Yeah, it's just kind of a mess. And Frank Anwar in the chat asks if the Kings can still keep their pick. There is a way in which they can still keep their pick. It's complicated, and it requires a team like Atlanta to win and go into the play-in. I mean, go into the playoffs in the East and beat Orlando, and then Orlando to lose again to a team like the Heat. And that would push one team down. And then again, here in the Western Conference, if the Kings were to, say, lose to Dallas, and then Dallas was to beat Memphis, that would push another team down into the bracket, into the lottery system, and push the Kings further down in the standings. So it is possible that they could actually jump up and still get to like 11 or 12. But I don't know that it's very likely.
Hammer, who is the most important player headed into Wednesday's game for Sacramento? If you had to pick one, who would it be?
I'm going to say it's DeMar DeRozan. And that's because there are good DeMar games and bad DeMar games. And if he has one of his good games where he's part of the system, I think the Kings can, you know, not only beat a team like Dallas, but I think they could beat either one, Golden State and Memphis. If the ball's not moving, if it gets stagnant, if we're seeing a bunch of mid-range jump shots with way too much time on the shot clock, I think it's going to be a difficult game for the Kings. And I think we all, at this point, we've seen enough of DeMar to know when he's spectacular and to know when, like, he's not helping. And if you get one of those games where he's on and he's moving the ball and he's allowing someone like Zach LaVine to step up and be the player that he can be, then I think the Kings can beat not only – I think that they can actually make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's Zach LaVine. I think everything about this team is different if Zach LaVine is aggressive, which he has been really the whole month of April. I was pulling up his numbers from the month of April, and he's been fantastic. He's averaging like 28 points a game, shooting 51%. The big thing that I look at is the FGAs. He's averaging like 19 shot attempts a night, and everything is up from the previous month of March, like kind of considerably. And I don't think it's no coincidence that when he's playing with a certain level of aggression, that the Kings look different. The Kings look a little bit more cohesive. They look like a team that is more dangerous when Zach LaVine is aggressive the way he has been the last 2-3 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
And going into these two playing games, well, hopefully two playing games, but definitely going into the game on Wednesday, if you have the Zach LaVine that has been there in the month of April, I think you should beat Dallas. You should beat Dallas. I'm not going to say by how much, but you should beat them, and you have a great chance to beat whoever you play on that Friday. So I think he's the most important Sacramento King.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, I say DeRozan. I mean, to me, it's kind of like a Batman and Robin situation. Like, if you can get Zach LaVine to be Batman and you can get DeMar DeRozan to be Robin, then this team's just better and you give yourself a shot. And I hope that that's how they come out. I hope they, you know, that Zach LaVine is trying to get rid of that sort of, you know, thing out there about him that he doesn't show up in big games. I hope he does show up. I hope he, you know, comes out and plays extremely well. And if he does, like, I think the Kings have a really good shot, but I also think that requires other players to take more of a deferred role and sort of fit into a role as opposed to being a primary option and kind of living with that. And so we'll see. You know, we've kind of, even in the last couple of games, we've seen the good and the bad of both of these guys. And when Zach LaVine is cooking, he should probably take your last shot.
Okay.
That's a shot.
Okay.
That's a shot.
All right. James, just reminding you, he hates DeMar DeRozan.
That's a shot.
That
what they gave? Look, they gave DeRozan the ball. He should have passed it. What?
That play was ran for DeMar. That play was ran for DeMar. Straight up, he said it in post game. Yeah.
So, other than James's contempt for DeMar DeRozan, it sounds like an aggressive Zach LaVine is the most important component to a Kings win on Wednesday.
100%. Also, for the record, didn't Zach LaVine take the last shot in L.A. against the Clippers? Yeah, he did. They lost. Regulation. Yeah.
Yeah. They had like 3.5 seconds. I wish they would have worked for a better shot.
I didn't like the shot either. I didn't, and DeMar didn't like the shot. DeMar was like, I didn't.
No, he was very honest about it. Yeah. He made a mistake. He said, I went too far inside where Zubats was, and I couldn't get away from him. And he also said he didn't get fouled. He was like, I didn't get fouled.
Yeah,
he was like, if anything, it was on him
with that FGA to end the game.
Yeah,
yeah, but wasn't in that game, wasn't DeMar DeRozan 6 of 20? Wasn't Zach LaVine like on fire?
In that final 3 minutes or so, Zach LaVine was going crazy.
Mm-hmm. Zach, yeah. He gets into these like hot stretches where he just is just unstoppable. Like he cannot miss.
Yeah.
We'll come back. We'll talk more with James Hamm about the Sacramento Kings. They're playing game at the Golden 1 Center this Wednesday against the Dallas Mavericks. Medina and Casey return here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Just want to look up this video here real quick. Yep, let's see. The most unathletic. Yep, okay, good. Yeah, no, that's great. The vice president dropped the national championship trophy during the Buckeyes visit today.
Snap that thing in half.
Idiots. No, idiots, the Buckeyes, for actually going.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you deserve. Take your little two pieces of trophy home. Make me root for Michigan, idiots.
Say, go ahead, say go blue. Go ahead.
Yeah, go blue.
Yeah, let's go. Clip that. Let's go.
I think you guys were talking about LaRavia during a commercial break, during that commercial break. Hammer, do you have any updates? Do we have any updates? Is there any chance Jake LaRavia plays on Wednesday?
I'm sorry. Look at this dweeb.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's dweeb. Ridiculous. Dude has obviously never touched a trophy in his life. Shaq ass.
Don't let him like kiss your baby either.
God. Yeah, go RIP to the baby.
Baby's head fell off. I don't know what just happened. No, I don't think that they're – I mean – is there an outside shot? Maybe, but it sure didn't sound like he was playing on Wednesday and maybe Friday, but I don't think so. We're probably looking at more into if they were to somehow make the first round. Again, he has a fracture in his left. It's at the base of his left thumb down here, the scaphoid, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. And he's got some sort of fracture down there. And So I would not expect him to play. But again, he's been working out. He's been out on the court doing full warmups, and he's really close to playing. But he gave me one of those, well, it's not really up to me type deals. Hmm. Like, okay.
The interesting thing about that, and I know how pro sports work and the playoffs, but in that particular situation, where we're at in the season, no, it kind of feels like it should be up to him. I'm not talking about like saying any type of thing about Jake LaRavia, but we'll see, you know, teams hold out guys in that situation and instead of saying, hey, like, are you willing to, do you want to play? If you want to play and you want to give it a shot, shouldn't it be up to you?
Well, I mean, that introduces a whole bunch of other questions. And like, if you're Jake LaRavia, do you want to play when you're an unrestricted free agent in like 6 weeks?
Yeah.
And you don't know, you know, if you can get hurt worse or, you know, if you're going to have surgery or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. That's a tough one. It's not like he doesn't want to play. I mean, like, that's everything I get from him. It seems like he wants to play as soon as possible, but he also has to listen to the team doctors, and some things you can play through and some things you can't.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, Domas had a very specific injury that he was able to play through, which most players would not have played through, but he was able to with a whole bunch of tape and icing it after every game when he had his thumb injury. But, you know, not all thumb injuries are created equal. Mm-hmm. And his is very specific. Like, it's really close to the wrist, and like any type of like, you know, backwards and forward motion could really hurt. And so, I mean, like, look, Jake LaRavia has never struck me as a player who would back away from a challenge. If he can play, I think he would want to be out there and play. But that's not as so far. It hasn't been the case.
Yeah. And I want to be clear. I wasn't trying to question LaRavia. Not even more LaRavia. It's just the how sports go, especially in the NBA. Like, maybe around this time of year, they'll be like, hey, I'm willing to try, mm-hmm. but it's not my call.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, shouldn't it be their call a little bit more? But
no,
I don't know.
I don't think it should be, because they all want to play.
Yeah.
They all want to play. Like, someone needs there does need to be someone who say, "Nah, man, you can't." Like, you are at risk of serious injury. Like, you can't.
Yeah, and that's that's a little different. That's a little different. Somebody telling you, giving you all the information, and then you make your decision. Do you want to go out there and try? I guess
my first thing, if I was the person given the information, would be like, look, you can make the decision to play. That's fine. I'm going to go tell Doug, you're going to be useless. Like, you're playing with one hand and you can't move part of the other one. So, hey, tough it out, big guy. But I'm going to tell your coach, you're going to be completely ineffective. But if it makes you feel better to put the uniform on, fight the good fight. Yeah. I think Willis Reed can hobble out there and, you know, you can do whatever you want to make that a moment. But like when it's your hand or some, you know, or your wrist or something like that, man, that feels like a whole different animal in a basketball game.
For sure.
Yeah. It's intriguing.
We also know that Malik Monk will not be available for Wednesday's game. It's Malik has had such a weird stretch here. We had this conversation earlier, Hammer, talking about what this offseason might look like, and obviously we got a lot of time to talk about this, but is the conversation about Malik as a starter, do you think that conversation's now over?
Like, will he never be a starter again?
Would he be best suited in a non-starter role moving forward, at least for this team?
Well, I mean, I think that's always been the case. I mean, there are times where, again, this team didn't have other options, and he became the best option to start alongside Fox. But I don't know. Like, is there a chance that, you know, again, they move Zach LaVine this summer and they don't bring back a guard, and you've got to, you know, put Malik Monk back out there alongside Keon Ellis? Okay. I mean, I just think that the idea of Malik Monk, Zach LaVine, and DeMar DeRozan was the flaw as much as anything. Like, those three players together put so much pressure on Keegan Murray and Domantas Sabonis to hold up the defensive line. And to be honest, there's just no way to hold up as a defensive squad if you got three players who aren't known to play defense all that well as your one, two, and three. So I think that there is a possibility, but again, it's about roster. Like, the roster should look different next year, right? It's about roster creation and about, you know, mixing and matching the right pieces. For right now, you don't have the right pieces. You know, we even talked about it earlier, Kyle and I. You know, if you went into the 2024 NBA draft and just went best player available and didn't worry about things like position or player age or any of the other things that the Kings typically concern themselves with, I mean, there's a possibility that they could have gone out and drafted a guy like Jared McCain from Sacramento, who went like two picks later. He didn't make any sense for the roster at the beginning of this year, but he makes a lot more sense now. I mean, especially made a lot of sense if you would have had him during that stretch when Malik Monk went in the starting lineup, because one of the problems the Kings have, even like right now, they went out and signed Terrence Davis. Well, they probably could have used Terrence Davis like 2 months ago when they had Malik Monk as a starter, because then Terrence possibly could have played the Malik Monk role off the bench. So I don't think that it's a foregone conclusion that Malik Monk will never start again for the Kings or anything else. I just, when you look at the roster and the way it's constructed right now, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have him start. Mm-hmm. But we talked about it already. You know, you trade DeMar DeRozan during the offseason, Malik Monk as a starter might look totally different, especially if you can get like a long athletic 3-and-D, you know, 3-4 combo guy who can catch a lob and dunk. You know, Malik Monk might be a perfect fit for that player. So we're going to have to wait and see how it all pans out in the end.
How did we talked about this earlier on the show. How do you think Keegan Murray's season went? Like with the numbers that he ended up being, I think it was about 12.7. The percentages were about the same as last year. Two less field goal attempts per game. I thought he had a career high in rebounds, 6.7 rebounds per night. I thought he was fine this year. He had to hustle to get up, get that three-point percentage up a little bit. But all in all, like if you told me this is who he was for the majority of his career, and you had a good team around him, I'd be perfectly good with that production that he put up this past season. But what'd you think about his season this year?
Yeah, at $10 million, $11 million a year on a rookie scale contract, that's one thing. I do think that, you know, he figured out how to play with these guys a little bit better by the end of the season. But like if Keegan's pay jumps to 25 or 30 million a year, you need more than 12.7 points, you know? And I think for me, Keegan is probably the one that was impacted the most by the acquisition of DeMar DeRozan. And you could probably say De'Aaron Fox a little bit too. But Fox was able to kind of figure it out and play through it. I just don't think that Keegan ever did have the ability to play through it, especially when once they put Malik Monk in the starting lineup and he became the fifth option. So I would like to – I don't want to be too hard on him because I think a lot of his season is circumstantial. And, you know, it's like the situation the Kings put him in, not the situation he would have chosen. But for me, like, I think that there's a lot more there. And I wouldn't be super comfortable if he was at 12.7 points per game, 6.7 rebound, but 34% shooter from three for the rest of his career, because I just think he's a much better player than that. And I don't think he had the opportunity to show who he can be as a player full-time this year, and I hope that he gets that opportunity down the road.
What do you think his mark as a player is? Do you think it's on the defensive end, on the offensive end? Is it some sort of special combination of the two? Like, can he be a legitimate, reliable two-way player in the league?
Well, I think so. You know, I don't think he can be Kawhi Leonard at his sure. prime, mm-hmm. but I do think that he can be a player that's close to Kawhi on defense and close to Kawhi on offense. Like, I think he can be an 18 to 20 point per game scorer still. And I think he can be a 38 to 40% 3-point shooter, but it's got to be in the right situation. And maybe that situation never, ever like presents itself to Keegan Murray. But I like look at Cam Johnson in like year 8, averaging 19 point whatever points per game. Like, sometimes it just takes the right situation. And I would hope that Keegan doesn't have to be the right situation as you're playing on a horrible team and you're the only one who scores. But I also do think that he's a guy that could easily average 18 to 20 a game and not even like that wouldn't be that difficult for him. They just have to figure out the right situation and the right, I don't know, scheme to make sure he's involved.
I like his game. I think I see him a little bit differently. Like, I think he could, you know, I think we're nitpicking a little bit, but he can get to 15 points per game. I just don't see the variance in his offensive game to be able to get to 18, 19 points per game. He hasn't been able to show in 3 years that he can create anything off the dribble. He doesn't have a I shouldn't say he doesn't have a post game. They don't ever put him in a post. We don't ever see that. He doesn't really get to the foul line a whole lot. So he would, and it's possible that this could happen, but he would have to start doing things that I've never seen him do, in my opinion, for him to get up to that. And I just don't necessarily see it. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, he did average 15.2 points per game last season. And so like, look, I think the standard, you know, if you look at most players, how their scoring arc goes, you can get two or three extra points per game in year three. Typically, you don't usually see a player get to 15 points and then drop all the way back to 12.7. And like, look, it's opportunity. Look at how many shot attempts he's taken. And a lot of those shot attempts, you know, even last year, he took like 0.7 more free throw attempts than he did this year. You would have hoped that his number would have got up to 2.5, maybe 3 this season, but that's just not the role that the Kings put him in at all. And I'd like to figure out how it all works out in the end.
Yeah, he's certainly he's a player that we haven't quite gotten a full grasp of. And I wonder if the same is true for Keon. You know, when we're talking about important players going into Wednesday's game, I get the idea of Zach LaVine and Domantas Sabonis in that Anthony Davis matchup. But Keon Ellis is in a starting position without Malik Monk is there as a backup. You know, Keon might have to, you know, if that shot's there, he might have to be aggressive with it. And unfortunately for him, he doesn't get like super aggressive with a shot. He's going to have to knock it down at a high clip. Mm-hmm. Like he can't, oh, he'll ease into it or, oh, maybe next time. Like, nah, yo, no, you haven't shot much the last five games. Oh, that's cool. Going to need you to shoot this one. Cause those shots might be there for him. He's another guy who's a really intriguing player to watch. And maybe for my money, a really important player to watch going into Wednesday's game.
Yeah. I mean, I think when, you know, again, Kenny, you talk about how we haven't seen Keegan take this next step as an offensive player and everything else. If you're watching really closely, you can see that Keon Ellis is taking that next step and has the potential to be a much better scorer than what he's been allowed to be over the last couple of seasons in Sacramento. And even last night, we saw him, you know, cut in, cut out, get to the lane. He's got a little float game, which he hasn't been able to show at all. And I think just like quietly, Keon just continues to work on his game. And I think the same thing with Keegan. I just think that, you know, if you're being a good teammate and you're a young player and you're surrounded by veterans, there's a good chance that you're going to, you know, defer to veteran players, guys who are, you know, either all-stars or are going in the Hall of Fame. And sometimes that's to your detriment. And hopefully, you know, if this saying, if they clean out some of the veterans on this team moving forward, it would provide an area where those two could step up and be a lot more than what they are today.
Do you care to comment on Malik Monk's tweet?
Well, Shams Monk.
You. Okay.
Shams.
Can James, can you confirm Malik Monk's tweet that Sean Cunningham, your partner over at the Kings Beat, is in fact joining KCRA?
I can confirm that.
Wow.
I don't know. I think I know this to be factual. Sean can no longer appear on our station.
Oh, because he's...
I believe KCRA is a paid partner of the Bad Guys Down South.
Yeah.
And so we've lost another one.
Damn.
We've lost Sean Cunningham. Sean
well,
Cunningham has gone the way of Flipside and Jerry Reynolds. Oh,
yeah.
Man. Well, congratulations to our man, Sean Cunningham. He's Malik probably had to break the news because Sean's at Coachella.
So it's Malik, the tweet goes from yep. Malik Monk's account. He used.
By the way, Malik Monk's last. Oh, he tweeted April. Okay, he tweeted not that long ago. Malik Monk tweets once a month. He tweeted January 19th, February 1st, March 7th. In April 6th, 7th, he really went out of his way to send this tweet. Go ahead.
He says, he usually reports news about us, so I'm going to break some news about him. Breaking! Sean Cunningham, who has covered the Kings in NorCal sports since 2001, is joining the sports department of at KCRA News.
Well, congratulations to our man, Sean. And James's partner on the Kings Beat, and goodbye to Sean Cunningham forever.
What do we like better, Sean Redacted or Redacted Cunningham?
Cunningham.
Redacted Cunningham is
good.
All right,
yeah.
We can't
say his name.
We can't talk to Sean. Can't talk to Sam. Yeah.
Yikes,
oh, man, it's tough. It's tough. Good for Sean. I didn't know this was a thing, man. Congratulations, Sean. Just out here. Just Kevin Durant and just jumping from
my next chapter. My next chapter.
The media tribute. Tribune. I'm sorry. The media tribune. Sean will have his post up.
Oh,
take
man.
My talents to. I don't know where that's at.
I don't know
Stockton
where KCRA
Boulevard.
Is located.
KCRA is.
Oh, wait. I do. Oh, it's downtown.
Yeah. It's. Oh, no. I thought it was somewhere else.
Yeah. No, it's downtown. Yeah.
Does that mean Del Rogers is finally retiring?
I don't know, because Sean isn't necessarily a nightly anchor type guy. Maybe he wants to
but
be.
But Dell's not. Is Dell an anchor?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, like
is?
A sports
anchor. Oh, okay.
So and maybe Sean moves into that. I don't know, but Dell.
Oh, Sean be in the streets.
And Michelle Dapper.
Yeah. Yes. Sean be in the streets, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, he'd be in the streets.
Yeah.
Sean somehow is at the A's game, the Kings game, and the spring game.
He was the only one to get the picture of the beam, right? At the A's game.
Yeah.
Others tried because they were in the ballpark, but the light wasn't letting it happen. He got the one from outside the ballpark.
He's crafty, and look. Nobody works harder than Sean. He's all over the place at all times. Yeah.
Sean's...
Yeah, he's so tied in, especially with like high school sports and everything else.
Sean is a legit GOAT. Like he's one of the best this market has ever seen. Well, Stephen Brown said, Sean will forever be missed.
And let me just say, might have to turn to the WNBA draft.
Oh, what's happening over there?
Oh, no, they're just on the red carpet.
Oh. Well, I think the draft is over, isn't it?
They're on the red carpet. I don't know. Maybe it is.
All right. We'll turn over to the draft. Oh, no. It's on next. We got it. We're good.
Yeah.
We're good. We're good.
Shout out to them.
There we go.
Well, all right. Well, that'll do it. Our show is over, and it ends with breaking news that Sean Cunningham can never join
yeah,
this.
We'll never be seen.
We'll never
be.
I'll see if I can work something out.
We can literally never talk. James is going to be out here like the United Nations trying to end partnerships to start another one.
trying to end the tariff on Sean Cunningham.
Oh, man. Congrats to our buddy Sean Cunningham. We'll have a lot more King stuff to talk about as we head into the playing game. At the Golden One Center coming up on Wednesday. We appreciate you so much for being with us. Hit the thumbs up before you go. Hit the subscribe buttons. If you're on the Odyssey app, hit the heart in the upper right-hand corner. If you're on the radio, just lock us into a preset. And most of all, wherever you're at, make sure that you're back here with us tomorrow beginning at 10 a.m. with James and Kyle, the Insiders, on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Gigantes!